morning. Today is Tuesday, August the 1st. Joining us this morning, coming out of his office, Bill McCauley.
It is amazing it's August already.
It feels
like July.
I'm thinking April.
Yeah, it does feel
maybe.
Like,
April means different for you. But
I'm thinking
the tail end of April.
The second half of April.
Yeah.
I'll go with that.
Oh, let's see if we can find a quote here.
I think you can.
I've got
confidence that you're going to be able to find a quote.
Now, the concept is not a quote. The concept is good.
Good quote?
Yeah, I was looking up brute.
Yeah.
And they said sea animal. So guess what I'm doing? There's animals all over the place.
Well,
none of them are really funny, though.
Well, it's a giant book. There should be some good quotes in there.
Okay, 1799. Lichtenberg. Okay, you had some letters in front of it. It's only in our eyes that people grow old. How's that for cool?
That is kind of nice.
Yeah, I like that one.
I mean,
considering how we both are qualifying day by day.
You do realize sometimes, I have the same windows on the world that I did when I was 18 or whatever. And so, I do, at times I'm kind of shocked at my reflection. Because I don't.
Those darn windows.
Yeah, that idiot on the corner of 4th and G Street with those highly reflective windows.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We're going to have to change that reflection.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, perfect. Come by and do something stupid. I might video you.
Yeah. Oh, hey, what does the IRS do not during tax season?
Well,
I mean, I know that they're still there. Mm-hmm. People know that they're there, but you never hear about them outside of taxes.
Unless you're getting audited.
Okay.
Yeah, so they do. A big percentage now of the data that the IRS collects arrives electronically. The more than half of tax returns are filed electronically.
Is that it? Only 50%?
No. When I say more than, I think it's, I'm not sure. I think it's in the high 60s.
Because wasn't there a big push like for 85, 90 a couple years ago?
And they're making real inroads. I mean, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's well above 50%. So well above half the data is being captured electronically, and that gives them, it's changed the world. If you think back, if we go back 20 years ago, the tax returns were arriving in paper, and they had people who were had systems they were trying to scan data, they had people who were key punching data, and it was labor intensive to gather that information and time consuming. So if you think about it, now, let's say 80% of tax returns are filed electronically. Well, at April 17th, 18th this year, you had, for every, and I don't know what percentage of people filed, but let's just say of the people that filed, you've got 80% of that data already captured. You don't have a human doing much. Matter of fact, I'd argue they humans don't look at too much, but that's a whole other matter at the IRS. But the point is, that they're out there, and their role now has changed in terms of what they have to accomplish in that post April 15th window.
A lot more review rather than just monkey business.
Yeah, I think it's definitely more more systems based than it was manual activity.
Monkey business was the reference to data entry, not swinging from trees. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good Good morning, KINS. News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Bill McCauley. Bill, with the IRS having more, I guess, resources available, manpower hours available to do things that are more constructive, is the audit percentage going up? Is the rate of fraud going down because of fear of auditing? Are they able to do more things that they were initially tasked with that they just didn't have the resources to be able to get into? When you're efficient in one area, that opens the doors for a whole bunch of other things to be able to get accomplished as well.
Well, the IRS is like most governmental agencies. They will tell you that they're under-resourced, and they probably are. And there's not enough money to go around to fulfill their mission. When you look at what's happened, as an example, when we look at the health care law, Affordable Care Act, when that was put in place, basically the enforcement of that, the regulatory environment for that, runs through the IRS, which, you know, I mean, if you think about that, that makes only a limited amount of sense that we would use the Internal Revenue Service as a gatekeeper on health care. Things just keep changing. Things evolve, and of course, nothing happens in a vacuum. So, you know, that you push a little over here, and there's a consequence over there. And so what has happened over time is they've gone away from a lot of manual inputting activities. They've got they're capturing that data electronically, which has allowed them to devote resources into other areas, some of which has ended up being these major project areas like the Affordable Care Act. They've also they're also changing how they do their auditing. You ask the question, you know, are they auditing more or less? They're auditing differently, and probably less. Statistically, your chance of getting an audit are less than they used to be, but they're using the data that they've captured that they have earlier because they're receiving it electronically and not having to have that intervening step of capturing the data and dealing with the attenuant key punching errors that would occur in that process. They're more quickly able to identify things that are anomalies or things that don't make sense, don't fit their criteria. They don't tell us what they're very careful not to say. These are, you know, what's a red flag? I get that question all the time. Well, I probably know one when I see one, but it's hard to define what they are. In other words, you're looking, I'll have a client come in and they'll say, you know, gee, I've got this weird transaction. Is that going to be a red flag? Well, probably, but if it's legitimate, it still belongs in your tax return. So the IRS looks at a lot of things from the standpoint they look at, as an example, charitable contributions. And they'll say, okay, well, this person's got a $75,000 income and they've got charitable contributions of $2,000. That probably is in the smell test range. Somebody, $75,000 of income, and they have $22,000 of charitable contribution, that probably is outside the smell test range. And so, or the laugh out loud test, or whatever you want to call it, where the IRS would look at it and say, okay, that we want to do a little
There's
more scrutiny.
There's a story here. Yeah.
So then the IRS, what they've done is they've also changed the audit function, which used to be more labor intensive. They used to do more what we would traditionally think of as an audit. We're going to come see you. You're going to show us your records. And now a lot of times people who have audits are really, it's really a communication audit. It's a letter. You know, what they're doing is they're sending you a letter and they're saying, hey, we'd like to know more about this item and that item. And then you then respond to it and explain either why that is there or what this number is.
So it's probably actually easier for everybody. You don't get the panic when you see the note. Because it's not everything; it's just
very seldom now. Do you see those? They used to have different what they called tax TCMPs, which is taxpayer compliance management program or something. That was back in the 80s and 90s. They had these things, and they were full blown audits, and they would just pick people out. You know, they probably had some. They probably stratified their samples, but then they had these random people come
like
in,
line one
and they
line 99.
Blow the thing out. So whoever got it got misery. And then they would use that to infer, based upon the statistics associated with who that profile of that taxpayer was, what the likely compliance rate was and what the likely areas where compliance wasn't going on.
So they would be establishing their norms.
Right. And now I think the IRS is able to, should be able to, look and be much more insightful as to what they really want to look at. Say, hey, look, these are likely loss areas. So then they'll send a letter saying, and then you respond and provide documentation for these deductions or whatever the case might be. And then you know that or explain it or whatever the case. Sometimes most of the correspondence we see is a 1099 mismatch.
A number is inverted or something like
that. Yeah, or something was omitted from the return. I'll give you a good example. Sometimes people will have an IRA and it'll roll over. And the trustee that the IRA left, let's say it's Vanguard. Vanguard issues a 1099 and says, "Hey, this is an early distribution," because it didn't go necessarily trustee to trustee, so they got 60 days for the taxpayer to roll it over. Vanguard doesn't know if it's rolled over, so they say, "Hey, you didn't do that." Well, the client rolls it over, forgets about it, gets the 1099, doesn't take it into account in their return for whatever reason, and then the IRS comes back and says, "Hey, we see $66,000 of pension and IRA income that you didn't report in your return." And sometimes it's as simple as saying, "Look, taxpayer inadvertently omitted that item in the return. There's no tax it's owed." Sometimes
a 5-minute discussion.
It's typically done by correspondence, not a discussion. But it tends to go out by correspondence. It can be done on the phone sometimes, but it just depends on facts and circumstances whether that's the best course.
But it's different. It's a different experience now than what it has been.
It's evolving. Yeah.
KINS News and Information Time is 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with CPA Bill McCauley. Talk Shop presented by REDEC and by CDH Painting. Bill, some of the different aspects that the IRS has when the audit profiles. Now, you'd said that there's no posted threshold points. Okay. But, you guys punch through enough, you kind of have a general idea if this is getting into the gray zone. Okay, you're probably going to look a little bit closer just as a preparer rather than waiting for somebody else to look at it. You have your confidence. Okay, fine. And life goes on. I would think one of the areas of challenge is these various incentives that are out there. Now, you mentioned, behavior modification. okay, so here's an incentive to solar panels in your house. Here's an incentive for a certain vehicle type or domestic manufacturer or. Do those tend to cause problems when they get inserted? Probably not so much so, but when they expire and people come to rely on or anticipate or make buying decisions predicated on these things being there, how do those change throughout the year?
Well, they do. I mean, the over the years, the tax law evolves, and we see pieces of law come in, and sometimes a piece of law will come in for 1 year and be gone. Sometimes it'll come in for several years and be gone. Sometimes it'll come in for many, many years and then ultimately phase out. It depends on the political climate and, as you mentioned,
pressures.
Solar panels is a great example because that has been one of those pieces that came in temporarily, got extended, but ultimately that stuff starts. There's been a 30% credit for certain solar investments, and that's been a really sweet deal. But it's going away. It's getting phased out and going away. And the point is, it's kind of incumbent on you if you're doing something that you think there's. And another one that we saw a lot of was the hybrid vehicles because they were credits out there. But the Prius ones got used up in like a week, not really, but I mean they got used up pretty fast. And some of the other cars they didn't. Their credits stayed on longer.
So it's brand specific?
It was in that case. So they had so many that they allowed for this and so many that they allowed for that. So the more popular models, that their credit got used up faster than it did, as an example, with for maybe some of the other less popular models. So all these things mean that if you think that there's a piece of tax law, particularly an incentive in the tax law, and you think, oh well, gee, my friends, got a solar display on their roof last year, well, and I'd like to do it this year, you probably ought to inquire and make sure, do your due diligence, make sure you can get some of that information on the web. There's vendors that have pretty
good information. That's right. I think the vendors are probably pretty dialed in on that.
The vendors are pretty dialed in. Just make sure you're looking at a current website, because sometimes, you can have somebody that, anyway, we've seen websites that aren't being updated because maybe that vendor got bought out or, something has changed. So just be careful. Google's a great thing. Actually, for tax research, I use Google a lot as my first point of entry. And the reason I do that is that I can go in and Google a topic, and then I can get a sense what the keywords are. Sometimes the problem in searching in tax law is knowing off the top of your head what's the keywords that have been that the people that created this database of tax information, what did they think the keywords were? Well, sometimes they aren't what you think they are, and so you end up having to get a little more intel. And sometimes the easiest way to do it is Google it. I don't consider the Google unless the hit is IRS or somewhere. I mean, if it's to a vendor or to another tax professional's website or to whatever the case might be, I don't consider that authoritative. I consider it an indicator, and then but sometimes it's really helpful in drilling down on something. So, not that you can't use Yahoo or some other search engine. I don't mean to imply that. I think Google is just kind of
it's easy to type.
Yeah. So the point is that there's a lot of information out there, and a person who is making a decision based on a tax incentive ought to be sure that the tax incentive still exists. They come and they go. There's,
How do you keep abreast of them? Is there, you just type in or search for tax incentives?
No, but if you were doing, let's say you were doing a solar display, then you would type solar tax credit, see what you get. And eventually you'll go, oh, wait a minute, this is an energy tax. So sometimes the language, when you go to look at it, I'm thinking solar because it's a solar panel. But maybe the credit's really an energy credit. And so I wouldn't have thought to Google that. But by doing that, I go, okay, I see the solar tax credit because it's part of this energy tax credit. Now I know where to look more.
So I'd say more quickly. With vehicles, you probably don't search a brand specific. You probably type in automotive.
Yeah, and when those
automotive tax incentives that somebody my size can fit in, blank.
Yeah, well, in your case, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
But
motorcycle, oh good.
But the point is that just to be careful, and we talk about those credits for the hybrid vehicles. Those are all gone, I think, to my knowledge. I don't think there's any of them left at this point. They're long gone. So the point is just that there's stuff out there, but be careful because you want to make sure. You don't want to do something and then come back later and find out, oh, that doesn't work for me. And, we've run into situations, depending on what the tax law is for a particular tax incentive, where people, because of other things going on in their tax return, they thought they were going to get this credit, but they had this other situation that had a bearing on whether they got the credit. And they got no benefit for the credit, and it didn't roll over. And then it's lost. So if you made a decision based on getting this tax incentive, didn't fully consider what your tax situation would be, and then found out, you know, how happy would you be to find out you thought you're getting a $5,000 tax credit to find out you're not going to get it. You're not going to get it this year because you've got this other situation in your tax return. And, oh, by the way, it doesn't carry over.
Yeah, those ripples through.
Ouch.
And I would suppose that's part of making the phone call to say, hey, here's what I'm thinking. What's the downside on this one?
Yeah, and I think, I'm not here to sell using a tax professional. That's not my purpose. But there's some advantages because, and a lot of times, you know, you'll call one of us and we'll say, yeah, I think this is what it is, but I need to double check because that's been changing every other year. And I can't remember off the top of my head with certainty what the 2017 rule is because I just finished doing a bunch of 2016 returns, which I'm pretty confident about what I know what the rules are there, but I got to look.
Yeah, current year as it's evolving is kind of tough.
So it's one of those things that there are people who are smarter than I am, if you call them, they probably know all that stuff off the top of their head, but a lot of times I have to say, gee, I got to look that up. I don't remember.
KINS, News and Information Time is 8:44. We'll be back with more from Bill McCauley.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
Theshoppingshow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time. 8:47, we're back to Talk Shop this morning with Bill McCauley. Notice I'm referring from aging. It's next month.
Yeah. Nicely played.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you ever so. Mm-hmm. This time of the year, Bill, there's also, some folks are doing extensions, some folks have considerations of extensions, there are quarterlies, there's all these things that we hear about during the tax preparation season that kind of play out throughout the year. Are there any movement, any thoughts, any changes in any of those areas right now, just as there are with the incentives? Are some of these other areas moving and evolving also throughout the year?
Yeah, great question. One of the things that happened over the last year, and particularly affecting 2016 tax returns, was a change of due dates and a change of extended due dates. And so, you know, we worked through that. The due dates in the in March and April, and some of the changes that occurred there, but now we're rolling up on the extension season, which is we got a couple of months to get some
here we go again
get all that stuff done, and we got another mini rush coming, and some of those tax returns have different due dates than they used to, and so a person
what's driving the differences?
Well, the goal, I think, is trying to have a more logical sequence for when things are due and how they affect other tax returns. Let me give you an example. Historically, a partnership tax return was due on the same date as the individual income tax return, April 15th. But information from partnership returns is necessary if you're a partner to partner in a partnership to complete your tax return correctly. So when you have the same due date for the partnership and the same due date, you can see the problem. Oh, I got my partnership return done on time, but I didn't have time to finish my individual return because that information just became available. So what they've tried to do is rethink the sequencing of when things are due to say, okay, partnerships are due on September 15th on extension. Trust and estates are due on the 30th of September, and then individuals are due now on on October 15th. So they're shifting some of that around, and
kind of a recognition of what makes sense.
Yeah, it sort of does. It's imperfect. It's just because the world's complicated and there's lots of
variables.
Yeah, exactly. But it theoretically is better. We're still working through it the first year or two, and I think that there's always hiccups and bumps as you work through it the first couple of times. But I think it'll get more comfortable going forward.
Well, I would think it also kind of levels out the workload for the receiver as well as for the working side of this, whether it's you guys or somebody doing it on their own. And it kind of flows a little bit.
It has that potential to be a more logical sequence, yeah.
Boy, you don't hear that word often used. Yeah, that's why you're biting your lip, huh?
Who knew?
Not only is it possible, it's being done. Mm. Very cool. Thanks for coming by, bud.
Thank you, Brian.
Enjoy August.
Yeah, it's I can't believe it's August.
Yeah, here we go again. Yep. See you tomorrow.